Stay tuned. Coming up, it's Positively Revolting Talk Radio. The topic is climate politics and climate justice.
Your community radio station is having a book and record sale. Saturday, November 14th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., the annual KBOO Book and Record Sale will be at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. We'll have fabulous books and records, CDs, DVDs, classics and surprises, and treasures to discover. Again, that's the KBOO Book and Record Sale, Saturday, November 14th from 10 to 4 at Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. All proceeds go to support your favorite community radio station, KBOO Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. A $100 new or increased donation will become $200 to support the important work of KBOO.
If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched one-to-one by a group of generous donors up to $10,000. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Over 70% of KBOO's income is from you, our listeners, who take action to become KBOO members.
Go to kboo.fm/support to have your donation matched today, or mail your donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Cascade Media Convergence, a regional gathering of community-based media makers sharing space and skills to build solidarity on November 14th and 15th on the Portland State University campus. There will be skill shares, issue-based strategy sessions, regional breakouts and workshops, as well as movie screenings and a keynote presentation, editors of Octavia's Brood, science fiction stories from social justice movements. Again, that's the Cascade Media Convergence, November 14th and 15th, on the Portland State University campus in downtown Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Break our legs, and we say thank you, and they offer us
Good morning. Good morning. It is 8:04 in the a.m. You are listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio on KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial or KBOO.FM in Portland. I am here this morning because yesterday at the City Council, the last couple weeks, some amazing things have been happening with environmental victories, and we're all shocked and happy, and I've got three great people to help me talk about this. My name is Lynn. Usually Ani is here, but she is back in town, but she can't breathe, so it sort of makes radio hard to do today. So she will be back next week, and I really want to thank Linda Olson Osterlin and Lisa Loving for being Positively Revolting for us for the last few weeks. I appreciate it, sisters. Thank you so very much. But let me get on with this morning. First of all, I'd like to introduce Regna. I want to make you Regina for some reason. I don't know why. Regna Merritt, who is the Health Climate Program Director for Physicians for Social Responsibility here in Portland. Good morning, Regna.
Good morning.
Regna. Nick Caleb, who is a professor, adjunct professor at Concordia, a fellow at the Sustainable Center for Sustainable Economy. He was a kayaktivist and... and a general climate activist, and ran for city council last year, did really well. Maya Gerard, who is an organizer for 350 PDX. Good morning, all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What happened yesterday? We have had some historic things going on. Should we start with what happened last week?
I think that's a good Regna? Place to start.
Okay.
So for months, we've been working with Commissioner Fritz and Mayor Hales to pass an oil by rail resolution. First, let me say that with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, we use science and evidence-based expertise to protect the air that we breathe and the water that we drink and the climate that sustains us. And so many of you know that the rapid development of fossil fuel infrastructure in the interior West has led to a stunning increase in the number of proposals for movement by rail of oil, coal, tar sands, propane. We saw the Pembina proposal come up early this year.
And what was the Pembina proposal?
That would have been propane moved by rail to Portland,
the gorge.
It could have come from the gorge. It could have come down through the I-5 corridor. But at any rate, you know, most of this of these fossil fuels would come through the Columbia Gorge, and many of them would come through Portland on their way north to proposed terminals in Washington State, or on their way south to refineries in California, or to refineries that are to terminals that already exist in Portland and in Clatskanie. So we are threatened by over 100 new trains a week.
Wow.
And these trains, remember, they're unit trains. They're incredibly heavy and long. Maybe as many as 125, 150
I have seen,
tanker cars.
I've seen the coal trains.
Yes.
It's insane.
And there are many oil trains already running through the gorge. We're talking about an amazing increase in the number that could come through. And what makes it so bad is that these trains would be coming through, many of them would be coming through Portland neighborhoods. So we've been working with council for months, and I've got to thank Commissioner Fritz right up front for being open to bringing this resolution to council. Specifically, there's the largest oil by rail facility in the nation proposed for Vancouver, Washington, right across the river. So, you know, we're sharing a river, we share an airshed, and there are incredible risks associated with that oil.
And don't you think there's more pressure for that now that the Trans-Canada pipeline has been nixed?
There is. I think we can talk about that a little bit later,
okay.
But absolutely. As many of our listeners remember, James Hansen had said that the Keystone Pipeline would be game over if it were to be implemented. And I think we're talking about the equivalent of 28 million new cars on the road, additional cars on the road. And so, yeah, there'll be a huge increase in the pressure to, again, move that through Northwest Port. So the role that we've played in Portland is so important and can be a model for other cities. I'll just say a little bit more about the oil train specifically, and then I think we should talk about the fossil fuel resolution, which is, you know, so amazing. So the Bakken oil is volatile. It's hugely flammable, highly flammable, and contains elevated.
So Bakken oil?
Bakken oil. It's coming from
it's
the Bakken.
It's from okay.
Yeah, oil fields. And as many people know, at least 10 crude oil trains have exploded recently. We've seen 47 people killed, evacuations of thousands, billions of dollars in property damage, and the shutdown of drinking water supplies. Our team in Washington and Oregon at PSR analyzed 125 peer-reviewed medical journal articles and connected these proposed oil projects to increased rates of illness, hospitalizations, and healthcare costs. So we know that oil trains can and will lead to explosions, derailments. There were just two derailments in the past week in Wisconsin, increased air pollution, first responder delays, excessive noise, the tank fires, water pollution, oil spills, and climate-induced impacts. I mean, the list is incredible.
It does seem to go on and on.
But for us, this translates for our health into heart and lung problems like exacerbations of asthma and COPD, cancers, growth and development problems, stress and mental health problems, injury, and even death. So the other thing to remember is that oil and other fossil fuels coming through our communities particularly threaten already vulnerable populations. Our children are at risk, the elderly, and populations already at increased risk due to their race, ethnicity, income, and pre-existing medical problems. So through that process of reviewing 125 journal articles, it was pretty clear that it was a rational decision to come to the conclusion that oil transport and storage is an unacceptable threat to human health and safety. Mm-hmm. So again, we said last week, and we'll say it again, we're profoundly grateful to Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fritz for bringing this to council, and we were so pleased that the whole council voted, at least four of the councilors who were present voted to support that. And that kind of, this whole process helps set the stage for an action that Mayor Hales was proud to bring forward, and I think I'll stop talking now and...
Nick,
and
you want to
let us talk about the fossil fuel piece of legislation.
Yeah, what happened yesterday? So that was a week ago, and made people hearten. And so they had postponed. They didn't want to vote on it last week. I suppose they wanted the whole council there. I believe Dan Salzman didn't show up to the.
Yeah, he wasn't there the first time.
Yeah.
And that was the rationale that Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fritz had for postponing the vote. I think they thought they probably could have hammered out the details over time, but it was getting late in the evening, and they set a time certain date for what ended up being yesterday,
right.
Which means that they have to vote on it. There's no delaying once you put a time certain on it. And so we were confident that we would get a vote on it, and I think most of us would have preferred for it to be over that Wednesday, but it was probably good in the end that they took the time to really hammer it out and get consensus on council, because the scene yesterday was really magical at City Council, and I'm on the show frequently enough that you know that I don't say that very often about City Council proceedings.
This is true.
So it was something unique.
I believe in your testimony you said you were giddy.
Yeah, giddy as I was crawling out of my skin. I said I was enthusiastic, all these words that generally don't associate with City Council. But it was really great. There were kids from the city that were coming in. There were all sorts of people from all sorts of groups, diverse backgrounds, speaking about science, speaking from experience, speaking about their fear of the future. Really, really solid testimony all around. And you could sort of feel that in the last year, something's happened in the city. And climate work has been, you know, going on for decades, but there's something building, and it's starting to come to the forefront. We I mean, 6 months ago, I don't think anybody would have expected a fossil fuel infrastructure ban to pass a city council anywhere, you know, and Portland was maybe the best bet for that sort of thing, but we still thought that we were years off. And so the fact that before the end of 2015, the like almost exactly a year from the day that the Pembina propane terminal was endorsed by Mayor Hales, that he'd be sitting in front of council saying, actually, you know, we were going
to
go the other way.
What happened to Charlie Hales? He was possessed by, was it talking to the Pope that did this with him? I mean, I was looking at him yesterday going.
I think there were a couple of things. Number one, I think the Pembina experience, he was informed by that in very important ways. And his staff sat in every one of those hearings. And, you know, as those of us who were there know, they were remarkable. And I think that helps shift the debate. Plus, there's no doubt that, you know, as being one of 40 mayors called to meet with the Pope, that had an influence too. So within the last, well, I believe the papal encyclical came out in June.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lancet, a prestigious British medical organization, came out with about 2 weeks later with a call that kind of mirrored the call of the Pope that, you know, it's bad. It's
time.
It's not too late. And we can all take actions on every level, on an individual level. And I think the Pope also, you know, really made a call to cities in particular to lead, because as we look at what's happening in Paris and what may or may not happen, all politics is local, and that we have a responsibility to provide leadership in our cities. And that's what this resolution is doing as we go into Paris, as we go into talks with the Western mayors in the coming month. Mm-hmm. The legislation that was passed.
Well, let's say exactly what that was.
Yes.
For people who might not know, because there was very little press coverage of this yesterday. I was looking for things. I don't have a TV, so I wasn't watching the local television, but I couldn't seem to find anything except for those of us who had actually been there. So what exactly passed yesterday? Maya, you want to tell us?
The fossil fuel policy, which was passed as a resolution yesterday, would ban all new construction of transport and storage infrastructure for fossil fuels. That includes coal, oil, and natural gas. And that's really important that we have all of those fuels in there.
Yeah, it was interesting. There was only one person who testified in favor of it. It was like, it was sort of out of Hank Hill. Like, what will happen to the poor propane gas people? I didn't quite know what to do with that.
We'll give them jobs in renewable infrastructure.
There we go.
We'll give them new jobs.
Yes, I know. It seemed pretty pretty much a no-brainer. So,
yeah, I think it's important to point out, too, that this resolution doesn't interfere with the ability of,
it seemed
of,
not,
you
yeah.
know, existing school buses to run on propane. It's really about the expansion of infrastructure whose primary purpose is to transport or store fossil fuels in the Portland
mm-hmm.
area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed pretty clear that what is going now is will be there.
Yes.
But
yeah.
They just don't want to expand it anymore.
Exactly.
So when we started, and this may still, this I'm sure changes the position of the port, but the port had said no coal and no oil right now. So again, given the fact that the KXL project through that route is dead, we already were looking at 100 oil trains coming through. And, you know, if we look right across the river to Soro, and which we should talk about a little bit later, because there are real opportunities to weigh in on that. But also in Longview, for example, they're talking about a new propane export facility and an oil refinery, which would be the first oil refinery in 25 years on the West Coast. So, again, they could build, they could have trains going, they could have infrastructure that facilitates all that. And so between these two resolutions, we've really created a backstop to protect the health of our region and our climate. And I think we're going to see this just multiply.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's the whole point. Portland can't exist in isolation. And the reason why it's important for us to start is that we can demonstrate how it's possible to legally say no to these projects if communities want to. And communities up and down the West Coast seem to want to say no to these things, and they're trying to figure out ways to do it. Imagine you're a small community and these giant fossil fuel companies come in with more money than God, throwing it around all over the place, can buy PR, can more or less bribe their way into city by purchasing things for the city.
Promising and, yeah, people work.
You'll have jobs forever and ever and ever. And people, I think, you know, have seen industry come through and have seen industry die. I've seen it happen in different parts of the country. People are familiar now with what happens in West Virginia after they blow up mountains and they leave communities in ruin. People are familiar with, you know, what happened in Detroit when the automobile companies left. They know what happens when, you know, a industry leaves, and the fossil fuel industry is not going to be around forever. It just scientifically can't, or we're not going to be around for very long. And so people know that we need to make a just transition, but they're scared and nobody knows how exactly to do it. And so the beauty of what Portland did is that we didn't figure everything out yesterday, but we said, we know we have to switch trajectories. We know that tomorrow we're not going to be off fossil fuels, but we know we have to get there soon. And we know that at some point we're going to have to make the hard choice to orient ourselves there and give up money that we could take from the fossil fuel industry. And that's what Portland did. We put our money where our mouth is. And so now begins the process of just transition. Now begins the process of building those coalitions between environmentalists and labor and trying to figure out how are we going to put people to work building this green future.
Well, and also, so is some of the concentration going to go over to Washington because of what they're being pressured to do?
Well, at the end of November or early December, the draft environmental impact statement for Tesoro, which again would be the largest oil by rail facility in the nation, will be released. And that's going to be a huge opportunity for people on both sides of the river to come out in support of health and the climate. There's also another, a smaller oil by rail facility proposed at called New Star in Vancouver. It'd be significantly smaller, but also presents a threat. For example, the city of Vancouver, which opposes expansion of oil by rail facilities, identified drinking water as an issue, and in August got on the record the fact that they'd have to shut down at least one drinking water well if there were an oil spill in the Columbia because of the threat to the Troutdale Aquifer, which is the sole source aquifer for most residents of Clark County. So there's a whole myriad of threats associated with a direct and immediate local effects that are compounded when you consider what the overall impacts to the climate would be. So we're hoping, and people should just be in touch with every group that they've been getting alerts from, emails from, newsletters from, to help mobilize for those hearings. They probably will come in January, public okay. hearings in Vancouver, and we hope
and
everybody
will come
there.
And what are some of the websites there. That people can get in touch with?
Obviously, Physicians for Social Responsibility, Columbia Riverkeeper, 350 PDX,
Portland Audubon. Portland has been huge.
Right. Yeah. Greenpeace has been
doing some work.
Yeah, absolutely. Friends of the Gorge. There's a beautiful coalition. I've got to say, it's so impressive to see the joining of a regional coalition that was fighting coal and oil with the local folks. And it's just an unstoppable force. We're very optimistic about the future. And, you know, the port elections in Vancouver are also pivotal. And
when are those happening?
Well, they have happened. And in fact, Eric LeBrant, who was just elected as Port Commissioner, they're fortunate in Vancouver that those are elected positions rather than appointed positions.
Yeah.
He spoke at 2 weeks in a row at Portland City Council. And he's a great champion. His election was kind of a proxy vote for the community of Vancouver on the Tesoro Savage project, and he won. And those are the little victories. That's a third victory in 2 weeks. That's stunning, and it probably signals a turning point for us in this battle.
Excellent. I want to just let people know that you're listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO. I am here speaking with Regna Merritt, who is the Healthy Climate Program Director for Physicians of Social Responsibility. Nick Caleb, Concordia, adjunct professor, fellow at Sustainable for the Sustainable Economy, climate activist, and Maya Gerard, who's an organizer for 350 PDX. And we're talking about the amazing climate environmental victories that we have had lately, where things need to go from here. And if you would like to participate in this conversation, please do give us a call at 503-231-8187 for questions that you may have for our guest or comments for our guest this morning. And someone named David from San Francisco wants to add something about energy efficiency. Hello, David.
Oh, yeah, morning. Good morning. Actually, I wanted to raise energy inefficiency.
I'm sorry you did. I read it wrong. Pardon my dyslexia at this hour.
Down here in San Francisco, I work with a nonprofit that works with energy issues. And one of the big scandals, in American energy today is that we're actually overproducing by twofold the amount of electricity that we're burning every moment of the day. And so they're leveling mountains. You remember they're coal mining, leveling whole mountains. They're taking twice as many per hour as they should. So energy inefficiency is being held up by our taxes. So when you look at the barge traffic and you look at the shipping traffic, the rail traffic, they're giving the power plants a huge subsidy to deliver this coal every hour of the day, and if they didn't give them the subsidy, then solar would have beat them out years ago. And so this whole idea that wind power and solar are not efficient, that's preposterous. And the reason why we're burning twice as much is because the power plants are so far out of town that it wastes electricity to ship at 50 miles or 75 miles or 100 miles. And so even though the grid seems like a good idea, it's actually designed to waste electricity. Because if you had a windmill in your backyard, the electricity would go 50 feet or 100 feet or whatever. But it would not be going 50 miles. And so all of this resistance, you know, the electrical resistance, the heating up of the wires is just wasting, you know, twice as many mountains per hour per day as is necessary. And are you talking about the XL pipeline? If they cut it off, then it's going to end up coming to Vancouver and then...
Well, that's a possibility. That's not something that's... Anybody want to comment on that? No.
I will just underscore that is a threat.
It's a threat. It's a threat. It has not happened yet.
That fossil fuel is looking for a market, and that market is, refineries and potentially other countries. Remember that the U.S. House of Representatives recently voted to lift the ban on export of oil. And these mega corporations are positioning themselves to expand all their terminals in Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia so that they can rapidly, when that happens, or if that happens, which we'll fight tooth and nail, they can ship all that oil across the ocean to energy markets.
You know, it's interesting. You remember just 4 years ago or 6 years ago, it was a patriotic thing to say that this oil is going to stay in America. Now all of a sudden it's not patriotic. So
because it was a lie.
Yeah, exactly. The same crooks that I used to live out in Colorado where they did the oil shale, not the tar sands. The oil shale was going to waste 22 gallons of water per gallon, but the tar sands are even worse. It's 35 gallons per 35 gallons of highly polluted water just to produce 1 gallon of gas.
Yeah.
And so when you start looking at that, if they're going to have this ancient swamp in northern Canada, stick it in a pipeline, all this tar sands, and then push it all the way down to Texas, across America, they have to pick up 35 gallons of water just to push this sludge all the way down to Texas so they can process it. Well, does Texas have enough laws about the environment, or are they going to welcome 35 gallons of polluted water per day? If they're going to spend a million gallons...
You raise a lot of questions, David, and thank you so much. And Maya wanted to make a comment. So thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, David, I wanted to touch on something you mentioned, and that's both centralized large-scale energy and also the political clout and financial support for fossil fuel industry as it stands right now. Both of those present large problems for the way that we use and produce energy in this country. We see that fossil fuel industry receives enormous amounts of money in subsidies for producing their fuel, and that we can track back a lot of lobbying influence and money from fossil fuel industry in the political system at all levels, at the local level, at the federal level. And
apparently David is not with us anymore.
And so it's really important that we use tactics like fossil fuel divestment, so pulling money out of the fossil fuel industry investments, and also pressuring our local politicians to not receive financial incentives from fossil fuel industry, which sort of helps cut the political clout of the fossil fuel industry so that we can move forward and shift where we're developing our energy from. And then the other point that you made was that I think your point was about efficiency and energy efficiency and having electricity run through large amounts of wiring all around the country. We should move towards more decentralized energy, partly because of efficiency issues, which I'm not as familiar with, but also because the model of huge energy plants of any type, whether it's solar, wind, or coal, or gas, or propane, puts an enormous pressure on the ecosystems that they're in, and no matter what type of energy it is. So having small-scale decentralized energy, although it won't meet the needs of the entire country, will definitely help support with the issue that you're talking about.
All right. Thank you. Now we have Edith. Hello, Edith. Good morning. Yeah. Welcome to the radio.
My father worked for 45 years as a chief engineer for Pacific Power and Light. And so I grew up always looking at things from his corporate perspective, and yet I have had the passion and have been an activist for 47 and a half years that we need to have our energy system be centralized, diversified, democratized, and redundant, just as we follow what works in nature. And we also need to watch what is the underlying attitude, because our thoughts are going to guide us or blind us to different things. When the big fossil fuel corporations, they incorporate to avoid accountability, avoid taxes, and socialize the costs and privatize the profits, when that mentality comes to town, it is looking for the workers that are not going to whistleblow or hold them up. So they don't hire local people. They have the outsiders that they already know have these particular skills and are loyal to them, or just cheap folks without an ethic going for a quick buck. But that's also where we have in all these fossil fuel kaboom and bust industries, that also that's where we have child sex trafficking. And it's more and more infants and toddlers in small, easy, quiet, and small, so that when we have those folks come in, they're not just raping and ruining the land and our economy and our community and our democracy, but they're doing that to our children. And so we need to stand firm for what we do believe and be really clear about what we don't want. We can have solar in Portland with more BTUs than Germany has, even though we have our shade. And there's new glass, people had the bronze in this age, you know. We are now, people saying, in the glass age, because there are glass on solar panels that will create energy with the wind, with birds landing on it, and with raindrops on it. So that motion energy is transferred to electrical energy. We can have passive, we can have insulation, we can have our homes, our work, our school, our business all in place, and we can be growing food on almost every surface, and we can be collecting energy with photovoltaic walls and roofs and eaves and cars,
Edith?
And vehicles.
Thank you.
And
I really, yeah, I know. And I thank you for all those good ideas. And Nick was going to give you a comment. And thank you so much for calling this morning.
Yeah. One of the reasons why we're so excited about the fossil fuel resolution that just got passed is that if you read the resolution itself, it's if you're an activist of any kind and you've been waiting for a government entity to acknowledge science and to talk about the risks of fossil fuels all the way along the life cycle, wait no more. And it's rare. People don't, I mean, there's lots of us, yes, in the world that wait for the poetry of resolutions, I'm sure. I mean, when we
there
read it for the first time,
like that. Yes,
we've been participating in that process, and we watched it for the first time, and we saw just like you ticked down the boxes, and they actually strengthened it. One of the things that Commissioner Novick added to it was to add, oh, also fracking causes earthquakes, and it was something that we had overlooked before, but it basically documents the entire risk system that's inherent in fossil fuels, from extraction through transport and to combustion. And so the story of why we need to get to where we're going is written in the law. And so it's really amazing. And as communities, you know, I think a lot more people, when they think about fossil fuel economy in the abstract, or if the only time they ever come into contact with oil is at the gas station, they don't really think about the risks too much. But when people are putting the infrastructure in your backyard, it becomes a lot more real to you. And you imagine, well, what if there was an earthquake outside? What if this, and you know, what if somebody just makes a mistake like Kinder Morgan did and spilled a bunch of diesel in the Willamette last week? What if that would have been a slightly larger scale issue? If they can't control diesel that they're putting in boats, can they control the safety for these larger tanks and things like that? And so we're really taking on that risk. And just as the caller was saying, the way of constructing a society to get rid of those risks is to construct it in a decentralized way that's more, it's safer on the spot. We're starting to get the technology to be able to do that. We've also, probably some of the next political battles in Portland are going to be with utilities and figuring out, I mean,
hopefully.
Yeah, and those are the big ones, because the utilities fight hard for that position, and they're kind of like our central energy dealer. And if we do want to copy some of the stuff that Germany's been doing with their feed-in tariff and decentralized solar systems and figuring out ways of sort of efficiently distributing energy, we're going to have to go to the utilities. And
well, even Tacoma has public utilities. It's like gas, electric, even cable. I think they have two or three competing cable systems or internet systems. So
yeah, and so what we're hoping is that the city's declaration here in our policy situation is going to affect not only the City of Portland's decisions, but all of these entities within the City of Portland will respond. And we'll give them the credit of good faith first, that people will come to the table and want to join us on that clean energy transition. But there's a lot of political opportunities for us to continue down this road in the next
few. Do you think it's getting politically expedient to be an environmentalist? Do you think, I mean, it seems like that doesn't seem to, I mean, I watched Novick and Salzman yesterday just kind of finally have to, okay, suddenly they're going along with something they seem to want this, some things that they seemed opposed to at the very beginning, trying to find some excuse. They seem to get that was not a political, I mean, political expediency is not necessarily what's absolutely the right thing to do, but in this case, it seems to be coming like that.
Yeah.
Maya.
So we were talking earlier about Charlie Hales and how he came to this position, because last year he had brought to the table the proposal for the Pembina propane facility, and now he's brought to the table a proposal to ban all new propane and fossil fuel infrastructure. And I think that, yes, being hand-selected by the Pope and by President Obama as a leader will definitely shift someone's resolve around certain issues. But even the mayor of a city can't push forward a policy this bold and this strong without the backing of a huge population of their constituencies. And I think that in Portland especially, the environmental community and also a lot of our partners have come together in a really powerful coalition. And this has been building for years. This is not something that cropped up in the last couple months or around around Shell or any of these specific projects. This has been work that we've been doing for a long time. And I think that we became maybe especially visible 2 years ago with a big action on the bridge between Portland and Vancouver. And this also jumps back to the issues that Portland is interested in what's happening in Vancouver with the oil trains, because we do share a close geographic proximity, and people who live in Vancouver work in Portland, and people who live in Oregon go to Washington all the time and have family there. And so there was this large visible action called Summer Heat, where there was people on the water and on the bridge showing that they would be willing to blockade the river if there were fossil fuel, either by rail or by water coming through. And then we've been building those relationships for a long time. And one of the reasons that Charlie Hale cited as something that pushed him to resist the Pembina propane proposal was that he got over 3,000 personal comments from people in Portland saying that they didn't support the proposal. And that signaled to him that there's a huge constituency of people who in Portland who want extremely bold and scientifically based policy, especially on climate and dangerous and toxic fossil fuels. And so that's what allows something like this to happen.
Right. Well, and 350.pdx had a great piece where you could easily, it's like making recycling easy for people. It was very easy to comment to all of the commissioners that we wanted to persuade to vote for this. It was an incredibly easy thing to share, easy thing to do and with email or whatever social media you wanted to do it on. I thought that was excellent.
Yes, Rekha. Those mechanisms are going to be very important in the future, because this resolution directs the city staff to propose changes to city laws that protect us from these fossil fuel projects. So we're talking about laws, ordinances about land use, public health, safety, building, electrical nuisances, and fire. These are ordinances and code that need to be changed in order to protect us from the fossil fuel infrastructure. And these are going to be coming to council. It was underscored in by the city council members yesterday that there will be work sessions, there will be public opportunity for public comment on each and every one of these ordinances. And these ordinances are the teeth of the resolution. So we'll be calling on you.
Yes, I don't sit
not
back
only
in
to
your
go across the
yet.
River to testify in Vancouver right. and in Longview, but to this is where the rubber
it's just the beginning.
Meets the road.
Yeah.
This is really important. And so thank you to everyone who came. I mean, we know people were, we had overflow rooms.
We had three overflow rooms.
People were shunted
people
to the
outside.
Portland building to watch it. And I know that can be very frustrating if you've come prepared to testify and you're shipped to another building. So many people were turned away yesterday. So take heart. There's another opportunity for you, and it'll be
really?
Just as important.
Yeah, okay. And we've over the years have learned how to do both direct action and public process, and that's what makes these coalitions effective and interesting right now in the mm-hmm. climate world, is that we sort of like mastered different arts that are usually there's just like a break between them and people have one or the other, and our coalitions have so many levels of talent at them that have learned how to work together, and then we have these amazing artists that know how to package this so that we're communicating the right way, and it turns out to be extremely fun. It's not a super fun issue when you think about climate change, but we managed to
should be fun.
It is.
Or who's going to keep doing it?
Well,
it's
fun
when you're winning.
Well, yeah.
And really, you know, Mayor Hales had an incredible speech yesterday about how we're...
I recommend that everybody go to the City of Portland website, because you can watch the entire proceedings of both weeks on in the archived footage, and it's so inspiring. So he had inspiring words about kind of being at a turning point. I mean, we talk all the time about being at a tipping point with the climate, but we're at a tipping point now with activism, and we know we can make a change now. You know, whether it's the American Academy of Pediatrics or the American Association of Public Health, the Pope, the Lancet. It's happening now, and that is so gratifying for so many of us who have worked so long and hard on these issues. And, you know, again, we talked about the coalition across the river, but we also have in coalition with ranchers in Montana, with the Lummi Nation, who are trying to protect their treaty rights near Cherry Point with the coal export proposal there. I mean, there's all the way to British Columbia, and, you know, with a recent victory in elections there, it's much less likely that they're going to be rubber stamping fossil fuel export facilities there. So we're on a tear here, and it is so exciting.
It's the way things go.
We need to have this rapid conversion to a low carbon economy. We have to be very aggressive and focused, and we're doing it.
Absolutely. Well, let's take another caller. Laura.
And, you know, again,
Laura, you want to turn down your radio?
Because
we liked hearing Regna, but we already heard that. Laura, are you there? Perhaps we'll let Laura alone for a while and see if she can catch up with... maybe we'll take Paul instead, Kathleen. What do you think? Hello. Okay. Harvey.
Hello, Lynn. Thank you for the show.
You're welcome.
And hello, Regna, Nick, and Mia. I want to thank you for doing the more than necessary work and keeping us all out of harm's way. I'd like to make a couple points of why it's such a bad idea to put coal transport and storage into the area there. The West Coast... is from Vancouver Island down to Point Mendocino in California, have the Cascadia subduction zone. The subduction zones create the biggest earthquakes in the world. You don't want to put in LNG plants. They'll crack open like eggs. It'll be like atomic bombs going off. All the coal storage, everything, the railroad tracks will all get mangled. It'll be such a terrible event that the first responders will not necessarily be able to get around to people first. They'll have to secure the environment. And it's the worst investment in the world, putting in all that infrastructure on top of the Cascadia subduction zone. And secondly, in a newspaper article today, it says large swaths of the northern hemisphere, home to 2 billion people, could suffer increased water shortages due to shrinking snowpacks, researchers said on Thursday. So the global baking due to all the burning of these fossil fuels is now threatening the water supply to 2 billion people living in the northern hemisphere. And I say, where's the profit in a burnt-out planet? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Harvey.
Thank you, Harvey. And yes, I want to thank you for bringing up the whole issue of LNG, too, because while we've experienced a victory here in Portland, there are activists and ranchers and people who have their lives and property threatened by the Jordan Cove proposal, and we need to remember them, and we need to keep the pressure on our elected officials, both at a state level and a federal level, to protect us and to protect the Coos Bay and protect Warrenton from these various dangerous proposals.
Yeah, it really seems to me, I was thinking about Nestle going into Cascade Locks and how that seems to not be happening. When Nestle first wanted to do that, Cascade Locks was economically, you know, down the tubes. They were really having a hard time. I don't know if it's from tourism or what, but that's not the case anymore. They're not quite so, and the native tribes have gotten involved, and our governor even seems to be wanting to turn that sort of thing around. So, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, we'd like to
there?
See that kind of leadership
we'll
on
see.
Jordan
yeah.
Cove, too.
She spoke on it finally. We don't, It was very noncommittal, sort of like a recommendation letter that maybe we could do this different. But her attention is at least starting to get focused on the project. And so I think folks that are working on the Nestle issue would like to see more out of Kate Brown. But at least she's sort of starting to get involved in it. Mm-hmm. But because of pressure, right? Public pressure.
Yeah.
And one of the amazing things about Portland's environmental movement right now is that we're able to like play defense on so many fronts at once. I think that's one of the things where I'm super interested in the Nestle stuff going out in Cascade Locks. We haven't had any time to pay attention to it whatsoever. But people that are working at BARC, mm-hmm.
yeah,
are organizing around it or taking tours out there. They just put a ballot initiative out there to oppose it in the city of Cascade Locks. And there's all this exciting effort that goes on that you almost don't even hear about until like a victory goes. And like, wow, they're still doing this stuff. This is amazing. And it's all throughout the region. And so there is an emerging consciousness. And there's people may not even be necessarily like in direct contact all the time, but we're on a similar trajectory. And it gets very exciting when you sort of step back and see the quality of work that's being done and the future that's being laid in front of us.
And it's kind of relieving to know that so many people are doing it, that, you know, three people don't have to think that they've got to do everything and be completely burned out, because it's another thing that happens in activism is burnout. And it's so nice to have a victory or two to rejuvenate a person.
It is. And I think it's particularly important for our young people. Some of the most beautiful testimony came from students, young students at Sunnyside. And I think at International School in Beaverton yesterday, there were some plaintiffs in the Children's Trust litigation present yesterday. You know, 8-year-olds, you know, they're like 10-year-olds worrying about the future of their 8-year-old siblings. I mean, the testimony brought tears to our eyes. And it's heartening for them to see that they, working with all of us, can effect a change. And, you know, we need that so much. There are beautiful, articulate young people out there, and they're going to help change the trajectory
of the
planet.
It's going to be up to them at some point. Yes, it's going to be up to them next. Let's see. Is Laura back on the line, Kath? All right. Laura.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for reflecting on yesterday's resolution. It was such a powerful moment. I was there for part of it, and I was just deeply moved and so grateful to be there. And I have a question when I think about this in a larger context. How do you think the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, affects this resolution, and how this resolution affects the TPP? Any thoughts about that?
Who wants to take that? Nick?
Yeah, I can start that off. The TPP is extremely dangerous, and it hasn't passed yet, which is important to know. Obama's indicated that he would like to sign it into law, but we can still mobilize around it. It's dangerous because there are these very strange environmental principles that would allow companies who can make an argument that their profits are impacted by environmental regulation would be able to sue cities, states, and governments in like basically business courts to demand that they be compensated for their supposed lost profits. And it's a very bizarre precedent that would be set. Basically, it would call any environmental regulations anywhere into question.
On the whole planet.
Yeah, it's absurd. It's philosophically like strange and dangerous. It's just like, you know, a corporate wet dream. Like, what's the dumbest thing that we could write into law with all of our power? Like, we get free money.
They went right down the line.
Yeah,
with
like
that.
We were going to do a bad thing and you stopped us, so you have to give us money. Like, that's what it comes down to.
Bizarro monopoly.
It is. It's crazy. And it's sort of the last gasp, I think, of this, like, corporate governance structure that doesn't have any moral justification anymore. People don't really buy into it, but it's built itself into our international governance systems. And so part of when we're unwinding the fossil fuel industry, I think we're also starting to do work at unwinding that sort of like system that's been set up. And so, I mean, for us at the local level, I don't work in federal politics anymore. I don't even really pay attention to it that much, I have to say, even though I teach government and all stuff, because it's an area that's largely, you know, it's isolated. It's in its own little sphere, and Washington doesn't really listen to anybody. And so we can't stop based on what the TPP says. If they pass the TPP and they start trying to make us ease our laws, then we have to fight and keep our laws and, you know, call into question the legitimacy of a system that would say that we have to breathe poison and drink poison, all the rest of that stuff. So in some ways it's very dangerous. And in the other way, like, we have to beat back efforts like that if we're going to win the world that we want anyway. So
absolutely, Maya.
Yeah. And as Nick was saying, that even if this passes, we can't just roll over and say, oh, we can't create local policy around this issue because the TPP means that someone could just sue us and we'd have to give it up. No, like, there are people all around the world. It's you can't really find much in the U.S. media around the resistance in other countries to the Trans-Pacific Partnership and a couple other international trade deals that are happening right now. But there is massive resistance. And I think this also brings us back to the point that Nick made of having people who are willing to be involved in public process and in direct action allows us to really stand up against issues like the TPP, where even if we don't have the political clout to affect whether or not Obama signs this into legislation, we do have clout to resist and protect the lands that we stand on, and we can take a lesson from...
As long as we're breathing, yeah.
Yeah, from the indigenous nations and tribal groups around the U.S. and North America and other populations around the world who find moral authority by standing up for their health and safety and their community security.
Absolutely. Let's take one caller really fast because we've got about 3 minutes. We're totally running out of show. Paul, can you make your comment short and sweet?
What you asked the question, what comes next? Here may be the answer. The state of Maine has just passed a law requiring the utilities to pay 33 cents a kilowatt hour to anybody who builds a solar-powered house with 100 solar panels. So I am building a 100-panel solar-powered house in Unity, Maine. And
are you in Maine?
No, I'm in San Francisco, but I'm doing it in Maine because I have the power to do that, and so do you.
Okay, just curious.
The banks love this law because they know they're going to get paid instantly. You're guaranteed for 20 years an income of $2,000 a month income from your solar-powered house if you use the magic number of 100 solar panels.
Okay, thank you.
The country that created this was Germany. They have 70,000 of these houses.
Excellent.
There's one other thing I'd like to bring up before we end, and that is that there's going to be a ballot measure next year that will that could help take us off of out-of-state coal. About one-third of Oregon's energy is now coming from out-of-state coal, our electric energy. And this is something that people should watch for. They should register to vote. And there's a campaign called Renew Oregon, which is going to has a broad and diverse support throughout the community, which is, we hope to shepherd through some new protections for our climate in the coming year with that.
Excellent, excellent. Any last comments? We've got about a minute left.
I just want to add that, again, this is an amazing step forward for the climate movement and for resistance to fossil fuel development, that what we have in Portland here right now is the boldest and strongest fossil fuel policy put forth. And the possibility for other communities to take up this language is wide open, and we would love to talk to people who want to get involved. If you want to read the text of the resolution, it's only like 2 pages. It's really beautiful. There's very little legal language. You can find it at 350pdx.org. I'm sure there are other places as well. It's Portland's Resolution 1157. So you can find it on the City Council website as well. And just thanks to everyone who showed up at the rallies and commented and sent letters and called their commissioners.
Absolutely.
We had thousands of calls into commissioners, and
yes,
it's really incredible.
We broke all records,
yeah.
Nick?
Yeah, and I would just say, please send a note of thank you to your commissioners for taking this action. I think, you know, maybe it was more difficult for some commissioners than others, as you suggested, but they made the vote in the end, and people deserve credit for it. Having it pass 5-0 is very important because it shows that, and, you know, Ted Wheeler endorsed it as well, and he's running for mayor, and many people didn't expect that from him. So technically, like, our political, like, sphere is in uniform support, so it's not even a political issue anymore. We accept that this is true, we accept that the facts that are presented are true, and we accept that we all need to get on a new trajectory. So I think, you know, Regna and Maya and I couldn't be more excited to be here in the morning. It's like early just to talk about this. We want to talk about it with everybody. So
excellent. Well, thank you for being our guest this morning and on Positively Revolting. And stay tuned next week, same time, same bat channel. And Ani will be back. Bye.
Thank you, Lynn.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Community radio station is having a book and record sale. Saturday, November 14th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., the annual KBOO book and record sale will be at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. We'll have fabulous books and records, CDs, DVDs, classics and surprises, and treasures to discover. Again, that's the KBOO book and record sale, Saturday, November 14th from 10 to 4 at Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast St-